Well, hey, everyone, I'm Pastor Judd Wilhite, and I want to thank you for joining us today. You know, Central's a place where it's okay to not be okay, and we are so glad that you're here. I hope you enjoy this message.
Good to see you guys today. Hope you're doing well. I am excited to talk to you over the next several weeks about Full House and how we can get more of our homes filled with love and God and hope. Some of you are like, I got a full house right now, full of crazy, full of drama, full of laundry, come on somebody, full of dishes, yeah, full of bills. There's my house right there for you. But we can have a house filled with so much more. I think part of the challenge is, it's hard to be a family today. I think it's harder than it used to be. I mean, when I grew up, it was a different era. You know, when I grew up, I was what you would call a free-range kid. Any other free-range kids? You know what I'm saying? Like I'd get home from school, and there was only one rule. My mom's be like, yeah, go do whatever you want. Don't die. And then be home by what? Dark. Just be home by dark. All the free-range kids know what I'm talking about, right? Be home by dark. And so I'd ride my bike miles from my home, man. Everywhere was our playground. We explored all kinds of things, got into all kinds of trouble. That's another message. You know, like, we did the whole thing. I mean, I remember at one point there's a four-lane freeway not far from my house. I remember being a kid, I don't know, 10, 12 years old. I have my bike, and I'm pushing it across the freeway. You know, I wait till the cars zip by, and then I run. Then I wait, you know, because my buddy lived on the other side of the freeway. Look, man, I didn't even let my kids get out of the driveway on their bike. Stop! Don't you go near that curb. It's a wild world out there. You could die, right? Like, it's a different world. I was a free-range kid. You know what they're doing now? They're putting air tags on their kids now. Some of you parents do this. So you see exactly where they are at all times. You can track them. They're good. They're in the restroom. Oh, now they're back in their room. You can follow. Different world. When I was a kid, you'd be out playing. You'd get thirsty. What'd you do? You just found a water hose, man. You just look around like, there's a water hose over there. You just walk up in some stranger's yard, get the water hose, turn it on, and just taste that taste of hot rubber. You didn't worry about germs or E. coli or whatever else is in the water. You just, it was fine. And somehow we all lived, only a little bit of brain damage. You know, like parents today are like, oh, no, no, is the water purified? You can't just drink any old water. You know, we get a real concern. It's a different world. Man, when I was a kid, your seatbelt was your mama's arm. She hit the brakes, and if you start going forward, bam, she just slap you back into that seat, right? Just hold you there. That was it. The most popular video game as a kid was Atari Asteroids for me. You know, and you'd have to go out of your way to play it. Today, I mean, we give these kids phones and iPads, and they have the whole world right there in their hands, man. Every game you could ever imagine, access to all the news you could ever imagine. When I was growing up, I'd go to school, and maybe I'd hear about something bad that happened in the world, or I'd hear about it on the school bus. I had to ride the any school bus kids here? I had to ride a few of you? Yeah. I grew up having to ride the school bus for like an hour one way every day. So, man, we did the school bus. Then we were tribes on the school bus. I got in fights on the school bus. I got my ear pierced on the school bus. Like, no lie, one kid brought ice and another kid brought a needle. And we're like bouncing around. I want to be cool like the rock and roll dudes that I was, you know, idolizing at the time. And, man, there was blood and it was a whole thing. But today, man, kids have access to everything in their pocket, the whole world. Something bad happens in the world, they see it in real time. They don't just hear about it. You know, they see the violence. They see the blood. They see somebody get shot. They see the bombing. They see the sexually explicit material. It's all in their pocket right there, right now, 24/7. A lot of them aren't emotionally mature enough to handle what they can see, and they just don't realize it yet. We put the whole world in their pocket, and often we hardly even supervise it. And we release, and this is part of why Look, it's hard to be a kid today. That's why I think depression's at an all-time high. Stress in students' lives is so high right now. Like, they feel this stress and this pressure. Online bullying, this comparing yourself to everyone else across the board and having to live at a certain level, having to have followers, having to have people watch your life, having to be a content creator. Man, all I worried about was, like, I don't know, who wants to go play catch? You know? It's a different world. It's harder to be a kid. And I'm sympathetic to that. It's harder to be a parent. Harder to be a grandparent. It's tough in our world today. But I want to encourage you. Because even though in some ways it's harder, there are a lot of things that are the same. The human heart remains unchanged. God remains unchanged. His word remains unchanged. And his heart to bless you and your family remains unchanged. He's available to you today. In fact, one of the things we learn when we look to study who God is we learn he is a God who loves to bless. Check this out. Genesis chapter 1, beginning in verse 27. I'm going to read this. When we get to the red word, say it real loud here with me. It's how we make sure everybody's awake. It says, so God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then God, what? Blessed them. I want you to notice this. The very first thing God does right out of the gate after he creates human beings is he blesses them. You see that? The first instinctual reaction is to bless. Who is our God? Our God is one who loves to bless his kids. From the very beginning, he introduces himself that way. And I want to suggest one of the most powerful things we can do in our lives is receive his blessing and then pass that blessing on to our kids and our family. In fact, there's a lot we could talk about today, but when it comes to family, whether you're a sibling, a parent, a grandparent, a grandkid, the most important thing you can bring to your family is a commitment to bless them, to be blessed by God, and to bless them in your life. What does the word bless mean? Bless means to receive favor and high value. It's like you're receiving favor, high value from God, and then you're passing that blessing on to your kids. That will fill your house with love. So no parent is perfect, but listen, you can be a blessing. You can be a blessing. Now I'm talking to you today as a fellow struggler, all right? I'm not the expert, nor do I think I am. I used to think I knew what parenting was all about. Then we had kids. And we've raised a couple of them, but let me tell you, man, I know less today than I ever knew back then, right? I had it all figured out back then. Now I'm just trying to get by and survive. But here's what I believe. You can get a lot of things wrong, but if you will commit every day to be a blessing to your family members, you cannot go wrong. And God will move in that. So first you gotta, and I have to receive God's blessing in our lives. We have to receive it. I don't know if you had family drama today. Some of you had drama just getting to church. You know what I'm saying? Like that's often the most family drama. Like you're pulling on the church parking lot and you're like, everybody be quiet. I'll end you right here. I brought you into this world, right? You know that? We will pick up on this on the way out. Praise the Lord. We worship you. Then you get in the car, right? About the time you hit the parking lot, you get right out of the parking lot. All right, where were we? You know, we're back. I saw this. I thought it was pretty funny. Just a couple slides here on social media. A six-year-old to her crying brother. It's okay to be sad. Sometimes we need to let our feelings out. And then the mom says, oh, darling, that's so lovely. Well done. Why is he crying? And then the daughter, I hit him. Classic, right? All right, one more. Seeing my kids getting along, laughing, and peacefully playing together is the best 14 seconds of my day. You know, families can be complicated. And the truth is, when you look at the Bible, almost all of the families in the Bible are a disaster. Like, you try to look through the Bible and find a single family that you can hold up across the board as the model, and you're going to be very frustrated. These families are filled with bitterness and strife and envy and jealousy, sexual scandal, murder, betrayal. I mean, you remember Jerry Springer back in the day? I mean, like Jerry Springer's got nothing on the Bible families, man. These families are a mess. And as a young pastor, that used to bother me. I'm like, God, how am I supposed to teach this, man? It's sort of like, well, and you realize so much of what God's teaching us through the Bible is an example of what not to do. Like, you see these families and you're like, okay, so if you do this, this happens. You don't want that, so don't do this, right? You do this, this happens. And then I started realizing, God, I think, did that on purpose. The reason you can't hardly find a functional family in the Bible, in part, is because it shows us, if God can bless these families, maybe he can bless my family. Right? Listen, if God can bless this crazy, maybe he can bless my crazy. Some of you know what I'm talking about, right? If God can bless this drama, maybe he can bless my drama over here, because we're bad, but we're not that bad. We're a mess, but we're not that messy. And all of a sudden, you get hope birthed in your heart. In fact, one of my favorite stories in the Old Testament is about a father named Isaac and his two kids, Esau and Jacob. Esau's the oldest. He's the firstborn. Jacob was the second. And the time comes for Isaac to bless his son, Esau. Now, in the Old Testament, the patriarchal blessing was given to the firstborn son. It was a very intentional, specific thing. It was irretrievable, unrevocable, and it was passed on once. Usually at the end of the patriarch's life. So Isaac's getting towards the end of his life. He can't see very well. He tells his son Esau, hey, go hunt, prepare the meal, and then I'm going to bless you. Huge deal in that culture, right? The blessing. Esau goes out. He's getting it all ready. And while he does, Isaac's wife, Rebekah, overhears that it's time for the blessing of Esau. Now, she's an interesting mother because she has her favorites, and she favors the youngest son, Jacob. And she favors him so much that she goes to Jacob and they conceive a plan. They say, Jacob, we're going to dress you up like you're Esau, and then we're going to send you in, and you're going to steal the blessing from your older brother. I mean, we're not even out of the first book of the Bible, man. We've already had murder, all this stuff. Now you got mom leading the scheme, playing favorites. So that's what they do. They dress Jacob up like Esau, put him in all these clothes, make him smell like Esau. They send him into Isaac, and Isaac's going to bless him now, pass on this irretrievable, unrevocable blessing from the father to the firstborn son. He calls him forward because he senses something might be off, but when he catches the smell, the stank, he's like, yeah, it's got to be Esau. Touches him, he blesses him, and gives him this spiritual sacred moment. And then Esau gets back from hunting and getting the food to receive the blessing to realize that his brother stole his blessing. Here's what we read in Genesis chapter 27, verse 34. When Esau heard his father's words, he let out a loud and what? Bitter cry. You see that? The word meaning is like from the depth of his core. Oh, my father, what about me? Bless me too, he begged. That sentence, that cry, I believe it's hardwired into all of us. Not only a need to be blessed, valued, loved, known, but a need to be blessed, valued, loved, and known by our parents. How many people are walking around in our culture today, and deep down underneath the surface, there is a bitter cry. And it is the cry, oh, my father, oh, my mother, bless me too. Accept me, affirm me. You want to know what drives so much of the world when you peel the onion back? It's this. You want to know what drives so many overachievers in our world? It's this core need. You want to know what drives so many underachievers in our world? It's this. We all react to it differently. But so many of us either did or didn't receive our father's or mother's blessing in our lives, and we have a bitter cry that we carry deep within us. How many middle school and high school hallways are filled with kids walking around, and they may never admit it, but the cry of their heart is, Father, mother, bless me too. Jacob stole his brother's blessing. Now, Esau did eventually get a blessing from Isaac, but it would never be the same blessing that was meant for him originally. And it split the family. After this, Jacob had to be on the run for 20 years. Esau basically makes a plan. As soon as my father dies and he's already old, I'm killing my brother. And he wasn't joking. It's the Old Testament. That's why they say go Old Testament on him. I'm going to kill my brother and it's game over. So there's drama and there's division all around the blessing. You know, some of us never received our parents' blessings, and we don't even realize how it's affected us. Who you date, who you hang with, who you run with, who you fall in love with, what you snort, what you smoke, what you drink or don't drink, where you party, what you do. So much of that is an effort and an attempt for us to fill a void that is left. The bitter cry, the bitter void. God, Father, mother, bless me too. Some of you had a sibling. They were like the golden child. Anybody raised in a family like that? Like the other sibling was the golden. Like they came in, they got everything they wanted. They were blessed. And you feel like you're on the outside looking in and you're longing for that blessing. You're longing for that affirmation. Some of you grew up in tough homes filled with addiction and pain and violence. And there was a whole lot of stuff going on, but blessing wasn't one of them. But what I want you to know today is no matter what kind of home you grew up in, no matter where you come from, no matter how deep that hole in your heart may be crying out for somebody's blessing, God Himself wants to bless you. God Himself can fill that hole. God Himself can provide that meaning that you seek in your life. God can do what your parents should have done. And He can fill your life. And here's why that's so important. Because when you receive that blessing from God by faith and you begin to live in it in your life, it then changes how you parent, how you date, how you love, how you relate to other people. Now you're somebody who's received the blessing and that empowers you to be a blessing to other people. You break the chain of addiction, the chain of pain, the chain of heartache and anger and dysfunction. And you say, in my home, no more, we will serve the Lord. In my home, we will be filled by the blessing of God. And in my home, we will pass the blessing on to our kids so that they know that love. I mean, we saw in my family very close to me. I'll tell you a story of a young girl who basically found herself in a situation where her parents were going through all kinds of difficulties. She had an alcoholic father and a very broken mother. Her home was marked by bitterness and sadness and dysfunction. When her dad was too drunk to drive home, he would get her and have her drive him, and she would sit in his lap. She could barely see over the dashboard of the car. She would tell him when to push the gas and when to push the brakes, and she would steer the car to get him home. Her mom had been through stuff that was so painful, she found it very difficult to express love or affection to her family. I also heard a story about a little boy whose dad was a leader in their church, whose mother was a Sunday school teacher. Her life seemed perfect on the outside, but her dad struggled with a very deep depression. When the boy was drafted to go to Vietnam, to everyone's surprise, his father ended up taking his own life. The boy was called back from Vietnam to take care of his mom and his brothers, and not too much later, he got word that his dad's dad also took his own life. So a family marked by depression, suicide. And that boy went on to fall in love with that little girl who grew up driving her drunk father around. They got married. And rather than pass on all that pain and all that trauma, they made a choice to break the chains that had bound their families for generations. The chains of addiction, the chains of depression, the chains of heartache, the chains of anger. They broke those chains with the help and mercy of God and with the help of their local church. They patiently sought out the blessing of God that can go 1,000 generations. And listen, they had 2 kids, and both of them went into ministry. One of them was a boy named Sean, who is now a pastor and was a pastor here for many years. And the other is a girl named Lori, who not only became a pastor, but she also became my wife. She may or may not be right here. She's blessed thousands of people with her teaching, her encouragement. She's blessed our home, our family. She's blessed our church home and our church family. But I don't want you to miss this. All of that goodness came from brokenness. All of that goodness came from two people who didn't receive the blessing, but who said, we will receive the blessing from God. We will break the chain of what we grew up in, and we will pass the blessing on to our kids. And they will grow to be healthy and whole and loved. You can be a victim, or you can choose right now to stand up and be counted as one who receives the blessing of God and allows that to take root in your life. At the end of our experience today, I'm gonna pray God's blessing over some of you. And I hope you will receive it from me as a spiritual father, maybe the blessing you never received, so that you can take it and take hold of it as God's blessing to you and go forward to be a blessing to others. So we not only receive a blessing, but we're called then, secondly, to be a blessing, to be a blessing. In fact, in 1 Peter, there's this fascinating passage where he's talking about family dynamics, how we're supposed to treat one another. And then at the end of it, he sort of sums everything up. So here it is, 1 Peter chapter 3, beginning of verse 8. So listen, before I read it, this is the moral New Testament challenge, or you might call it the New Testament ethic of the Bible for how we're to operate in families. If you want it all in one verse, here it is. Peter's going to sum it up. He's been talking about husbands and wives and kids and family, and then he says, I'm going to sum it all up. I'm going to give you the moral ethic. Some of you are like, how should I operate in my family? What does it mean to be a Christian family? How do we treat one another in my family? What am I supposed to do in my family? Peter says, here it is, summing up. Be agreeable, be sympathetic, be loving, be compassionate, be humble. Some of you need this on your refrigerator. Every morning you need to walk by and be like, okay, this is my job. Agreeable, sympathetic, loving, compassionate, humble. That goes for all of you. No exceptions, no retaliation, no sharp-tongued sarcasm. You know who you are. Look at this. Instead, bless. That's your what? That's your job, to bless. You'll be a blessing and also get a blessing. Parents, you read it with me. Parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, sons, daughters, you have one job. Like, you only had one job. You have one job. The world's complicated. Social media is crazy. You know, we don't know what to do with all the changes kids are going through. Here's what I can tell you. We still have one job, to bless. To bless. And if you bless, a lot of things may go wrong, but that in and of itself will cover a multitude of sins. Bless and be a blessing. 20 years ago, I read a book that rocked my world. It was by a guy named John Trent and Gary Smalley, and it was called The Blessing. And it talked about five different things that we learn from the Old Testament patriarchal blessing, like the one that Isaac would have given Esau, or the one he ended up giving to Jacob. And when you look at that specific Old Testament blessing, we see five different things that I think we can transfer to our lives for how we can be a blessing. If that's our job, to bless, then what does it look like as a son or a daughter or a sibling or a friend or a family member or a grandparent or a parent? Well, here it is. First, the blessing involved meaningful touch. You know, the patriarch would put his hand on the son's head before he encouraged him, challenged him, blessed him. Touch his arm, like there was meaningful touch involved. And we can't underestimate the power in our families of appropriate, meaningful touch. You see it all the time. You look at babies born in orphanages who receive meaningful touch versus babies in orphanages where they don't touch them. And the difference is remarkable in how those babies develop and move forward. We were made to experience all meaningful touch in our lives. You look at doctors who have bedside manner where they appropriately touch their patients. And across the board, they're rated higher. They're seen as better, smarter, more capable. Why? Because we need meaningful touch. And parents, you and I should be blessing our kids and our family with appropriate, meaningful touch. Somebody's like, well, I'm not really a hugger. We're not really huggers in our family. We don't really do that. You know, we just sort of like, hey. But don't underestimate the power of a hug.
a touch on the shoulder, of a moment where you pull a son or daughter aside and you put your arm on their shoulder and you say, I'm proud of you. You're doing a great job. I believe in you. I love you. That touch, so important. It's powerful. Our son, Ethan, he hates to be touched, man. He doesn't want anybody touching him. And years ago, my wife, like, she made a deal with him. She gets one hug a day. One hug a day. He didn't realize what he was in for because she now has a 9-second rule. It's a 9-second hug. And so half the time I walk through and I'll see my wife Lori in there with our big 6'5", 6' son Ethan, who doesn't like to be touched. And she puts her arms around him. She, 1, 2, 3. She's counting them off, man. 9 seconds. I don't care what he says. He needs it, and it matters. I remember when my daughter was growing up and becoming a woman. And as a dad, there's just kind of a moment in there where you start to feel like, you know, maybe I shouldn't treat her like a kid as much as I used to and pull her up in my lap, give her, put my arm around her, all that. Maybe she's a woman now. You don't want to make her uncomfortable. You want to sort of, I don't know, like you get this protective instinct, like, okay, maybe I remember my wife came up to me. She said, Judd, you have to continue to touch your daughter meaningfully and appropriately. Put your arm around her. Give her a hug. If she wants to sit in your lap as an adult, let her sit in your lap. You know, let her be there. Because here's what you don't understand. If you don't show her that kind of love and affection, she's going to get it somewhere. And you want her getting that from you because you want her finding a man who also treats her with that kind of respect and love. Meaningful touch, powerful. And it's hard. I think so many families, there's inappropriate, there's violence, there's all kinds of layers that go with this, but meaningful touch can be so powerful. Here's the second part of an Old Testament blessing, encouraging words. Can I just encourage you to encourage your family members? When you wake up, realize, what's my job today? My job is to bless my family. How do I bless my family? One way is through encouraging words. Kids, listen, when's the last time you said to your parents, hey, thank you for everything you do for our family. Thank you for working so hard for our family. Thank you for taking care of everything that you take care of for our family. Parents, when's the last time you pulled your kids aside and just encouraged them? Because you know the messages that are playing in their head all day long are rarely encouraging messages. Come on, somebody. It's that they're no good, or they're not worthy, or they'll never achieve, or they'll never be enough, or they'll never rise above. And you got to be the voice in their ear saying, no, you're created in God's image. You're loved by God. You're empowered by Him. Don't you settle for less. You hold on for what God has for you. Pour your encouragement into them. Be intentional about it. Sometimes we think, well, I don't give my kid a big head. You know, if you encourage them too much, they'll start thinking there's something. Listen, man, a couple thoughts there. One is, like, we live in a world that is throwing so many negative messages at them. I don't know that you can encourage them too much. But if you're worried about that, look, sometimes we say things that aren't true to our kids trying to encourage them. Like we say, you're the fastest kid in the world. And if they start to believe you, that's going to be trouble when they get to school and realize, no, they're not. You know, they're back in the pack. You're the smartest kid in the world until they get to school, and then they're not. You can tell a kid they're valuable, they're loved, they're encouraged. And then if you're looking for something to praise, praise the process. You worked really hard in your school paper. I'm so proud of the extra work you did. You don't have to tell a kid they're the smartest kid in the world to say, hey, look, I'm proud of you. You did a great job. And what I really want to call out in your life is how hard you worked. You see what happens when you work hard and you put your mind to something? Good job. Well done. You're praising the process, right? You ran as fast as you could. And that is what it's all about. You gave it your best effort. You did the best you could do. I'm proud of you for that. I'm cheering you on for that. Keep going in that. Encouraging words. Here's a third area of the blessing, and that is to attach high value. To attach high value. So when the Old Testament blessing would happen, there'd be meaningful touch, encouraging words. High value would then be attached to the person. And one of the ways we can attach high value and bless people in our families today is to simply listen to them, pay attention to them, find out what they love, what they dream, what they fear, what they worry about. Find out what's going on in the hearts and minds of our families. And this is important because That's why we call it paying attention. Hello. It's valuable. Attach high value to them. Then the next area would be to picture a special future. This would happen in the blessing, where a special future would be described and pictured. And this can happen in our kids' lives. I remember years ago, I went to an individual that I just believe is one of the greatest parents I've ever known, Pastor Mike Bodine here on our central team, and his wife, Lisa. Amazing, amazing parents. And they're a little further than us. And when our kids were young, I said, Mike, I need you to boil down everything that you've learned in all these decades of parenting, all these amazing kids, and give it to me in one sentence. What's the most important single thing that you did over all these years to raise all these amazing kids? How'd you do it? He said, I don't think I can just give you that. I gotta think about it. I'm like, take all the time you need. I'll still be here. A little later, he came back. He said, you know, if I could say one thing, it would be this. Find something your kids love to do and join them in what they love to do. He says, that's the secret, if there is one. Because if you can join your kids in what they love to do, conversation will happen. A relationship will develop. All of a sudden, like, there'll be moments where you can guide them and steer them in their lives. You can see what they're gifted at and good at, and you can call that out in their life. Why? Because you've joined them in something they love to do. You're on their level already. And I don't know what that looks like with your kids. Maybe it's sports. Maybe it's dance. Maybe it's athletics. I know for my daughter, it was music. So I've been to so many concerts all over the place. I've seen so many bands, some of which you've never heard of. I've been the oldest guy in so many rooms. You know, I've been to concerts where there's no seats. Y'all, I'm too old for that, man. I go to concerts now. I'm like, hey, man, where's the bleacher seat? Like, there's no bleachers. Everybody just stand up. What's going on, man? People are like, you know, jumping around. I'm like, hey, I'm just gonna sit down on the floor back here or something. Old back hurts. Even recently, my daughter texted me. She's grown now. Dad, this band's playing in San Diego. It's amazing. You know, I look at tickets for like $30. Nobody knows who this band is. This band's playing in San Diego. It's gonna be amazing. It could sell out. I'm like, it ain't gonna sell out. It's $30 a ticket. But anyway. We're gonna drive. I'm like, what do I do? Like, we're gonna drive down on a Friday in the fall and we're gonna see this band and then we're gonna drive all the way back so I could be at church and sat. I'm like, yeah, I'm happy to do that. And thank God she still texts me. And thank God she's inviting her old man to go to a concert with her. I'm in for everyone. That's why I'm like cheering on all the bands now. I saw 21 Pilots before they were a thing. Taylor Swift. I got your Taylor Swift now. I'm a Swiftie. Say what you judge me all you want. I'm whatever my daughter is. John Bellion, Lawrence, I got him. Yeah, I'm jamming it. I've joined her in what she loves. And it's the things that happen around that that give me the opportunity to call out the special future God has for her in her life. And the same with my son. I'll spare you all the stories, but it's about food and video games. And so, like, you're trying to enter into that world with him to attach high value. Here's another thing from the blessing, and that is then an act of commitment. An act of commitment. And that is that there's a commitment not only of the blessing of God over this person's life that you're blessing, but also you're committed. You're committed to see it through, to help bring the blessing in their life to fruition, to be faithful to them, to honor them, to realize how important they are. Because in the end, it's your family and your friends that will matter the most, and ultimately your relationship with God. I mean, I saw this so clearly with my own father. I remember years ago, I was here at Central, and I got a call that my dad was really sick back in Texas, and I needed to get home and see him. And so, you know, I went back to see him. Now, my dad was an amazing father. He was a small business owner. For 40 years, he led a refrigeration company, commercial refrigeration. He was a World War II vet. He was a master sergeant in the Army. He fought up in the Battle of the Bulge and all the way up into Germany with the Allied forces. He trained soldiers for the Korean War. And so he kind of navigated life like a master sergeant, you know, the way he handled things in his life. Big 6'2" guy, but full of love, amazing, amazing father. And so I went home to see him. And when I went into the hospital room, he was sort of unconscious. He'd have these lucid moments. And I remember one time he's sitting there and he just opened his eyes and he looked over at me and he says, "It's about time to wrap this up." Then he's out again. It's like, that's bizarre. But I think I understand what you're saying. Right? Who wants to be in the hospital, suffering, uncomfortable? He's like, I'm done with this. A little while later, he opened his eyes, he looked over at me again, he goes, "Let her rip." And then he closed his eyes, he was out again. I'm like, okay, Dad. At one point, he got zapped by his defibrillator, and he thought it was like bringing him back to life. It wasn't, but a defibrillator like keeps your heart in rhythm, and so his heart was going out of rhythm, so it would like zap him, and it would hurt. And he thought it was like restarting his heart or something. He gets zapped. He sits up. He opens his eyes. He looks at me and he says, "You better get that heart doctor in here right now. I paid him a lot of money. He needs to turn this thing off. I should be dead by now." Boom. He lays back. He's out. That's how a master sergeant in the army gets ready to die. But I remember my final moments with him. I'm holding his hand and he had been very out of it. And I just was going to tell him goodbye, you know, that I loved him. And we had this amazing lucid moment with him, just a gift that God gave us, where all of a sudden he just opened his eyes, he looked around, and he said, "You're good kids. I love you. I'm going for a walk in the sunshine. I'll see you on the other side." And that was it. It's amazing. I know it sounds like I made that up. It really happened. I'm bawling my eyes out. I'm telling my dad, like, what a great dad he was, and I just hope I could be half the man that he was, and I hope I can walk with integrity the way he did, and I hope I could raise my kids the way he raised us, you know, all the things. But what I realized watching my father pass is that so much of what we pursue in life is smoke and mirrors. Because in the end, what matters is your relationship with God and the people around your hospital bed. It's your family. It's God. It's a short list that really matters in the end. And if that's what matters at the end of our lives, maybe it should matter more in the middle of our lives. You know, we get so caught up in running after all these things that don't really satisfy, don't really fill us, and actually bring more drama and more pain amongst the people that we are closest to, that we love the most. What would happen if we got more intentional? If we all got up tomorrow and said, "I have one job to the world, but also one job to my family, to bless them." And we began to pray, "God, how can I bless my family today? How can I bless my son? How can I bless my daughter? How can I bless my spouse? How can I bless my parents? How can I bless my sibling, as annoying as they are? You know, how can I bless the people around me?" I believe God could move so powerfully in that. But first, we have to receive his blessing. There's a priestly blessing in the Old Testament. It's very powerful. And powerful in part because God himself wrote it. He gave it to Moses to give to Aaron to pass to the priests who were to say the priestly blessing over God's people. But it's not like the priests wrote this, like God wrote it so that the priests would say it over his people. "This is the blessing that I am supposed to say over you as his people from literally God's heart." And the blessing goes like this: "May the Lord protect you, may bless you and protect you. May the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show his favor and give you his peace." God himself wanted his people to be blessed by his heart. That's his heart towards you. So I'm going to ask you all to stand together with me. Bow your heads. Close your eyes. Bow your heads. Close your eyes, please. Some of you never received your parents' blessing. Some of you have walked around carrying the weight of that, the burden of that, the anger of that your whole lives. Some of you have a lot of unfinished business with family. But friends, if you will allow me today as a spiritual father to give some of you the blessing you've never received, let me pass on to you the blessing that God himself wrote for you. He wrote it for you, for your family, for your kids, for your grandkids. You can break that chain. You can lead differently. You can love differently because God himself loves you powerfully. And whatever your parents did or didn't do, God himself wants to fill that void. And so Numbers 6:25, let me just pray it over each of your lives today. May the Lord bless you and protect you. May he move and go before you and behind you. May he protect your house. May he protect your job. May he protect your family. May he protect your kids, your future kids, your grandkids. May he protect your faith. May he protect your heart. May the Lord bless you and protect you. And may the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May he turn his face towards you and fill you with his goodness and his peace. May he fill your home with peace. May he fill your kids with his peace. May he give you the peace that you never knew growing up so that you can lead and love out of that peace. May he fill you with his meaning and his purpose. May he empower you to share his goodness and his love at home, at work, with family, with friends. May you be a testimony for him. May you be a light in the darkness. May you show that there is another way, and may you live with your life filled from being known and loved by God himself. May he bless you, and may he protect you. May he give you peace. We ask this in Jesus' holy name. Amen. Amen.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed this podcast, there are a couple of things that I'd love for you to do. Make sure to subscribe and review this podcast and connect with us on social media by following at Central Online. You can also contribute to what God is doing through Central. You can simply visit centralchurch.online/give, and you can give a gift today. And thanks again for joining us on the Central Church Podcast.